You're listening to Screen Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Screen Heroes podcast. I am your host, Derek, and I have with me my two lovely regular co-hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Welcome back, everyone. We are continuing our discussions on the weekly release of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier on Disney+. So that means it's time for episode 4, The Whole World is Watching. And with that in mind, this is your spoiler warning for anything that's happened so far in anything in the MCU.
You never
know what we might bring up in association. I'm sure some things are safe, but I don't want to, you know, run the risk that something in episode 2 of WandaVision is important to one of you. I have no idea. So this is your spoiler warning for all of the MCU up through this episode. And I'm sure we'll speculate a bit as well, if you consider that to be spoiler territory. You have now been warned, and I feel like I've rambled enough that people will have been able to pause by now if they're worried. So let's dive right in. Let's do this.
Diving.
This was a long, like, this was a big episode. A lot of stuff happened here that I would have thought would have taken multiple episodes, but I guess you have to remember there's only two more left after this one. So is there anywhere specific you guys want to start, because there's a lot of ground to cover?
Well, I mean, probably the best place to start is right at the beginning when you get that scene with Bucky and Ayo. Oye, what's her name?
Ray was mouthing it.
Ayo.
Oh, madly, it doesn't work well when you're doing an audio podcast. I know. But that scene was, there was some weird sexual tension in that scene too. I don't know if you guys picked up on that or if it was just me, but anyway,
I think it's just two very attractive people.
Could be, but I mean, Sebastian Stan has in the MCU thus far not really had a chance to show his acting chops. It's been a lot of stoic looks. But that scene was pretty fucking incredible. Like,
it really was.
Yeah, it was moving, very moving. And I didn't know if we'd get a scene like that from him. But yeah, it was incredible. One of the best scenes probably in the whole MCU, honestly, in terms of like just sheer emotionality.
I was going to say, yeah, it was just really intense, really sad. I mean, it's good because it works, right? And he's freed and everything, and so there's that relief at the end of that, but it is just incredibly sad across the board.
Yeah,
it was nice background, that's for sure, because, like, you know, all that happened off screen. We just, yep, he's fine, you know, they freed him and that's it, and we never really got to see any of it. So
right,
I am really glad that they added some of that.
Agreed.
I am too. But it was beautiful.
Yeah. Absolutely. It did. Her whole scene in present day kind of negated a theory I had last week, where he was actually actively working for Wakanda, and this was all part of some type of mission or plan. And that's not true. Now, he knew that eventually someone was going to show up, which that makes sense. But my theory was squashed pretty early on in this one.
Yeah, it would have been cool, but I didn't have high hopes for it actually being true.
That's fair. I think that's fair, but it was definitely good to see her, and she's got, you know, she's pissed, obviously for good reason, and gives the White Wolf, was it 8 hours or 12 hours?
Eight hours.
Yeah, it was a short amount of time.
To resolve things, or she was gonna come take Zemo herself.
There was another theory of yours that got resolved this episode as well.
What's that?
Sharon Carter being the power broker.
We still don't know who the power broker is. Okay.
She's not the power broker. Literally refers to the power broker several times as him to other people. So
yeah, people never lie.
Yeah,
definitely not in the MCU.
Well, I mean, I don't think they're that clever with this show. Revealing that in the last two episodes, where she said very little development, seems like it's going to have not much of an impact. I mean, having another random actor being the power broker is not really going to have that much of an impact either. But
That's the only reason I'm keeping the theory alive, because at least that has more impact than it being some rando.
I just, the way she's written this season, I'm really glad that she's back, but she's like in this episode, what, now she's Batman, she like gets access to satellites, and the other thing is like she was like snapped in the blip or whatever, she was gone, they confirmed that in Endgame her name was on the list, and now she came back, and in like less than 6 months she's in charge of like a $500 million like art sale.
That might be a mistake, because in this she made it pretty clear when we first get reintroduced to her that she was there the whole time. So that's either a mistake, or maybe they thought she was dusted because she went underground.
Maybe. I don't know. But I know how it bothered you when there was a tiny little time discrepancy in one of the Spider-Man movies, and this you're justifying. So, you know,
I'm not. No, it's either a mistake or it's because she went underground. And that's a really, because they kind of harped on it when she's first reintroduced that she had to be on her own during those 5 years. And we even talked about how, you know, what did she do during that time? The skills that she's gained, the fact that, you know, she's now, you know, working with these other groups, that all happened while during the blip. So that's probably a mistake.
Yeah, could be. Either way, though, I think that she's like playing this weird role that is kind of just vaguely written, you know. They call it, Sam just thought that she might have access to satellites. Like, that's a really random thing for somebody that, you know, I don't know. Did she, was there something I missed in a previous episode that made it seem like she would have access to satellites?
I mean, it didn't really bother me considering she was with all those rich and powerful people just an episode prior. So, you know, having access doesn't mean that she needs to be the one doing it. It means, you know, she knows a guy who knows a guy kind of thing. So it that is not the thing to focus on in this episode for me.
No, I'm not focused on it. I just think that the way that they're using her is a little odd at this point.
Unless she's the power broker, and then it makes a lot more sense.
Okay.
I am going to say that if I wanted people to not suspect me of drug running superhero stuff, I would constantly be like, yeah, it's totally this guy. It's him. He did it. I would totally blame it on a dude.
100%. Maybe the him that she's referring to is Mephisto.
Yes!
I mean, probably.
That seems the most likely,
honestly. Or it's Ralph. You know.
Everything's Ralph Boner. Mephisto. Yeah.
It's Ralph. It's been Ralph the whole time.
That's right.
He's going to get his own little song.
Oh, we hope.
We can dream.
That's right.
So, all right. So we go on a little mission to go to this funeral. And Sam wants a moment or two or 10 to talk with Carly, and New Cap is not having any of it, even though Battlestar is totally on board with this plan. New Cap just is a total ass the entire time.
Did it seem like he was like a guy on drug withdrawals? Like, yep. He was just like trying to get his next fix this whole time. It was a really weird thing.
Yes, he really did come off like he was on something or withdrawn for something. It was intense. Like, he was acting erratic when in previous episodes he was very cool-headed.
I will say this sequence has one of my like most frustrating little cliches that are in films, any stories like this, where there's a character who means well, who gets to meet with the antagonist in all honesty, and right at the last minute when things might work out, everything gets blown and the antagonist thinks the whole thing was a trap the entire time. It's used over and over again, and I was really kind of disappointed that they went there with this.
Well, I think there's some stuff that we're skipping over. Like, first and foremost, Zemo being the one to get the information was pretty incredible the way he did it. It was very smart, and yeah, you know,
luring kids with candy.
Well, not only that, but you're
that's super villain stuff there.
It absolutely is. And turning the tables, like convincing the child that the other people are the bad guys, that he's with some really dangerous people that will hurt her and her family. You know, that's top tier manipulation. It is really impressive.
I'm surprised Bucky didn't hear him, because or understand him. Maybe he did hear him, but like Bucky speaks like six languages that we know of in the MCU at this point. So, you know, it's not crazy to think that he would have understood what Zemo was saying.
But there's no real payoff there, though, because when he is, you know, quote, warning the girl, right, that Bucky and Sam are really bad guys, nothing comes of that, because she still takes them all to the funeral anyway.
I don't know if that's going to pay off in another episode either. Like, this, it may not be anything.
But... No, the payoff was that he has the information that from the girl, and they couldn't just go get it on their own.
It is keeping his leverage this whole time.
Yeah, that was what it was.
Oh,
so
she won't tell them.
Right, exactly. He was just ensuring that he was the only one with that information, that they couldn't just go ask her.
Okay, that works. That makes sense.
It's not great, but I mean, that's at least what I assume to be the payoff for that.
No, that works. I'm fine with that. That makes more sense.
I do like that none of them would speak to Sam and Bucky. And finally, this one guy's like, we are not refugees. We are displaced. And I appreciate the side that they're giving to these people. They're really making Carly Morgenthau and the other displaced and the flag smashers, you know, they're making them very sympathetic.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, there's a lot of parallels between things Sam has said in the series and they've said. The one that stood out to me was I think in episode 3, Sam says that he should have probably destroyed the shield. Or maybe he should have destroyed the shield. And then Carly, when she's talking to the soon-to-be decapitated guy, says that shield should be destroyed also. So, like, there's a bunch of... Yeah, mm-hmm. That's not the only one. That's just the first one that springs to mind. So they really are making it like Sam does really identify with the Flag Smashers, and he really understands what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I like this for a lot of reasons, but mainly it's because the world isn't just heroes and villains, and there are a lot of gray areas for things. I like that. It's much more realistic. It's easier to relate to these people, whereas, you know, super villains, most of the time, there's always exceptions when a good enough actor steps into a role, but in general, super villains are just not relatable, you know. But the Flag Smashers are. Carly is. These are people who are fighting for their lives, for their families, for what they built during the blip that was taken away from them by other groups that, by the way, aren't really great organizations themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, that are also doing bad things in their own way, and they're doing bad things for different reasons. And so I like the complexity.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Like, there's a good chunk of people in WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier that I may not have, you know, sided with a year or two ago that I am now, because the development that the writers and directors have given them has been absolutely wonderful. Like, I'm not sure I would have ever sided with Zemo, but he is just becoming one of the most interesting characters. And I think that's really a huge part of these television shows. Giving these people more screen time is making them more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he makes a really good point when he's talking to Bucky and Sam about, you know, how you can't really distinguish, you know, super soldiers with like supremacy. Like, there's a relation there. Like, mm-hmm. somebody who asks for that serum is wanting to be superior to other people. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he makes some good points. It really, like, you know, makes you think a little bit. And they bring up Steve, but even Zemo, which I thought was interesting, even Zemo has Steve Rogers in high regard. Like, he said there's not been another Steve, or mm-hmm. there won't be another Steve.
Because again, you know, Zemo's not your typical supervillain, right? He's not looking for world domination and to kill Superman or anything like that. He has very specific goals outlined because of things that happened to him, his country, his family, that are real world consequences, right? And I like that. I like the levels that they've given to him and the fact that Steve is this unique person because he didn't seek out the serum. Right. That wasn't his primary goal. He wanted to help in any way he possibly could. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to do the right thing. He wanted to, you know, help people who needed help. And it just so happened that that led him to getting the serum. But that wasn't his goal.
Right. And I think that's the big difference. Right. And I don't think Bucky went after the serum either.
No.
You know, and so but it is interesting how scared Zemo is of Bucky constantly because he knows what he's done in Hydra. You can like see it. That actor does a really good job with Daniel Brühl.
Yeah.
Does a really good job with like the little mannerisms around Bucky to like portray that this guy is very scared of Bucky and doesn't really want to be anywhere near him if he can help it.
I appreciate the two different sides that they're giving because, you know, almost directly after the conversation that Zemo, Bucky, and Falcon have is a conversation between John Walker and Battlestar Lamar, and he is saying how he would take the serum, how it would help all these people. So you get both of it. You get the being stronger could have personally helped him and his people, and people wouldn't have had to die if he had had it in his system. And then on the other hand, Zemo has seen just how much damage this has also done. So you get both, and I love that. It was really good storytelling to include both sides of the argument.
Well, I think John Walker's side is not as clear cut as Zemo's. Zemo's is, I feel like, a much better point. Walker's, you know,
I was more talking about Lamar's side of the story than Walker.
Right. Well, wait, was it Walker that brought up the like people that that died because of his Medal of Honor or whatever, that whole situation?
Walker was talking about how he had 3 Medals of Honor and it was it came at the expense of all these people. And then he asks Lamar if he would have taken the super soldier serum, and he says in a heartbeat, and he's like, I would have helped all these people.
Right. And but the other side of that is like they would have probably killed more people
just to help people,
to help these people, and they aren't necessarily the good guy, you know. They might be the good guys in their eyes, but those other people think they're the good guys. So, you know, it's, I don't, it's a definitely like a deeper conversation than I'm qualified to have for a lot of this stuff.
Well, and Cap does have the advantage of basically fighting in 2 very clear-cut wars.
Yeah,
he fights the Nazis, right? Yeah. Which are just, you know, the universal bad guy now. And then Thanos, who wanted to wipe out half the universe. So there's really very little room for gray area in Cap's life. And so he has that advantage of never, he didn't have to be around for Vietnam or Korea or the Gulf War or, you know, the war in Afghanistan. He never had to do any of those things that are much more complex areas.
Walker probably had to do.
Right. Civil War is about as gray as you get because, you know, we've talked about how neither Tony nor Steve have genuine, completely pure, 100% selfless motivations.
Right. Yeah. It seemed more like toddlers fighting about something than grown-up superheroes, you know?
A little bit.
But, I mean, there was a lot of throwbacks to Civil War in this episode, too. But, and then, you know, you get John Walker coming into the conversation and confronting Bucky or confronting Sam and be like all machismo, like, should I throw down my shield so we can make it even? It's like, come on, dude, really? It's like the embodiment of toxic masculinity there.
A little bit, yeah.
And then he gets his ass kicked, and I mean, I loved this fight scene so much. so much. There was such creative use of the weaponry in a confined space. There was lots of good storytelling there, which I'm sure we'll talk about. You get the witty one-liner, like the Bucky, the like, looking strong. That was, I laughed so hard. That was so good. Nothing felt better than seeing this fake Captain America getting his ass whooped.
There was just some great memes that came out of this as well. Walker getting his ass kicked. Meanwhile, everybody else is just like taking drinks, off to the side.
Sipping tea or whatever off to the side. Yeah.
Because like nobody feels bad for him in that moment. Nobody does. Nobody. And certainly nobody's going to risk their lives trying to come in the middle until Sam does, of course, because Sam is the mediator and he wants everyone working together. And I
and they would have straight up murdered him. So he was going to die.
Walker?
Walker was going to die for sure if Sam hadn't stepped in. Like that spear was headed straight for his chest for sure.
Yeah, you're probably right.
They aren't the type to show mercy, at least as far as I've seen on screen.
It was a really impressive scene.
And I think the unspoken part of that, that hurt Walker more, was the fact that they were women, right? Because there is this thing of like a guy getting his butt kicked by women. Well, he must have a vagina, which is apparently some sort of like terrible thing for people to have. I don't know. But that was another level they didn't really touch on. But I'm sure for somebody that's as toxic as that guy is, that bothered him a lot. That not only were they not super soldiers, but they were women. So I don't know. I took that from it. Maybe I was reading too much into it. But Ray, being that type of guy, you know.
Did you get that, Ray, at all?
To be completely honest, I see a lot of like subtle misogyny in quite a bit of things. I usually just don't bring it up unless it's more overt.
I brought it up this time. You should be proud of me. See, I'm seeing it.
The thing with John Walker that makes him so fascinating and so hateable is the fact that he is completely affected by so many different things. There's toxic masculinity in there. There's PTSD. There's misogyny. There is racism. There's the need to be absolutely perfect, to be a symbol, to the whole anger bubbling right under the surface. Like this man is the pinnacle of mental instability. And I absolutely believe that misogyny played a part in it. I'm glad that they didn't just say that too. I'm glad he was like, they weren't even guys. Like that would have bothered me. I like it more that he said. No.
Yeah.
But I did think it was important that he points out like they weren't even super soldiers. Now, he may not be aware of who they really are and why they're so great at fighting, but he had this idea that if he was a super soldier, then he would be able to defeat anybody. He would just be strong enough to defeat anybody. And I think this is a lot of foreshadowing because it's not necessarily just about how strong you are. And he thinks that's going to solve all of his problems, and it's not.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people predicted it, so I can't take, sole credit. But a lot, I did say early on that I thought that he was going to get his ass kicked by super soldiers or by a lot of people, and that would force him into taking the serum. It didn't happen exactly the way I thought it would, but I think that, that was a pretty easy guess, and it came true. So, And same with what happens at the end of the episode. I mean, almost everybody that knows anything about the comic books was pretty sure that was going to, something like that was going to happen. In this case, it wasn't the death of his parents that set him off. It was the death of his best friend, but, similar outcome.
But I mean, I gotta tell you, I would not have expected all of that to happen in one episode.
It was a lot. It was a really, it was probably the most like plot driven episode so far.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that a lot because we only have two episodes left. We're going into act three now. This next episode is act three of the series. And stuff's ramping up big time. And there's supposed to be some big cameo next week. Did you guys hear about that?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's supposed to be, it's not somebody we currently know, but it's supposed to be the debut of a new MCU character that is well known.
It's Al Pacino as Mephisto.
Yeah, I hope so. No, I think they're going to be pulling like a Paul Bettany thing where it's actually like Captain Sam instead of like Falcon Sam. And he just like gets a new suit.
Oh, I thought you were going with, I bet it's White Paul Bettany.
That would be funny again. Though. Is Paul Bettany playing a third version of Vision?
He's actually Falcon now.
Man, I'm not even going to lie. I would love that. It would be watching everybody lose their damn mind about Ralph Boner again.
I kind of just want to see White Vision have a discussion with Zemo about the Ship of Theseus.
Yes.
Come on, like, that'd be a wonderful conversation.
Yeah.
Make an entire show about that.
Yeah. Everybody would complain that it's not normal MCU stuff. And, you know, I only want to see super people punching each other.
Like, but it brings up
nobody wanted to see Chris Hemsworth and his roommate Donald in commercials, but we did, and we were very happy about it.
Yes,
it was amazing. So I don't want to hear it. Give me all the weird extra content.
Yeah.
Well, and to Ryan's little point about like having, you know, White Vision and Zemo talking to each other, we get like these super intelligent characters, these very thoughtful type characters, but they rarely get to interact with each other. They're usually interacting with other people who are nowhere near as cerebral, right? And, you know, that way you get the balance. That's the whole point. But it would be fun to see some of these people in the same room together for a few minutes.
Yep.
So I'm thinking the cameo might be Thunderbolt Ross, but we've got him as a character already. So that doesn't really fit that criteria. I was thinking that they were going to introduce him as the power broker like we talked about. But it doesn't fit all the criteria. But there's a bunch of weird criteria, like... It's a big name character that we haven't seen in the MCU from an actor that we know. It's like, it's just, there's a lot of weird stuff. So it should be interesting.
Maybe it's She-Hulk.
It could be. There's a lot of rumors about that. I heard somebody say that they thought it would be Daredevil, but if they're using it, it's somebody that hasn't appeared in a movie that was one of the criteria too. It's not somebody that's appearing in a movie. So it could be somebody from the Disney Plus shows. So it could be She-Hulk.
You know, Kate Bishop, maybe?
Could be, yeah. Some sort of setup for one of the other shows. But I'll be curious to see how they can tie that in and not make it feel forced.
Right. So far, all of the suggestions have just sounded very forced.
Yeah. So. I mean, Thunderbolt Ross doesn't sound super forced to me, but he doesn't fit the criteria, so.
But She-Hulk kind of might work, depending on how the season, like, well, this is supposed to be next episode, not the final episode, right? Yeah, that makes it a little bit harder. I was thinking, like, if it ends kind of like... post all of these events and somebody's in court and she ends up being, you know, the prosecuting lawyer or something, they could tie that in, but that would have to be at the tail end of the season. So that I don't think that works either. That's a tough one. It is really interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't know if you guys would even
Ironheart could show up, I suppose.
It would be a weird one that feels forced also. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, we got Don Cheadle already. Maybe they both show up together.
Apparently, it's been confirmed that the character's a female.
Okay. So. Okay. That's, I mean, all three of mine were women. So
yeah.
It could be any one of those still, I guess. I don't know. Those are the three that come to mind because they are designed for TV shows that are coming up soon. So it's a fun way to tie in to upcoming projects rather than some movie that who knows when that's coming, you know?
Right. Have you guys seen the trailer for the next couple episodes or like the mid-season trailer that came out?
No, I'm purposely avoiding it.
Okay. Well, then we won't talk about it.
Sorry.
Okay.
So also in that fight, though, before we move on from that fight, they remove Bucky's arm with just a few quick finger throws at the shoulder component, and it just drops to the floor. And I mean, it's like a freezing kind of moment in real time anyway. But then, Ryan, you posted a really interesting thought in our thread in the Screen Heroes podcast forum on Facebook that I thought we should talk about.
Sure. Yeah, let's talk about it.
What would you like to tell people what the thread was?
It was basically, I'd have to pull it up to be sure, but it was basically saying that it was sad that the a lot of people were joking about the arm,
right?
And AO taking the arm off, but there was another point that was brought up that said it was sad that the Wakandans built in a failsafe to be able to remove the arm, and because it shows that they never fully trusted Bucky despite accepting him into their culture and making him feel like he was accepted as part of Wakanda and giving him this nickname and things like that.
It's incredibly upsetting considering Ao was the one at the very beginning to help him work through it. Now, she probably was not the only one who worked with him, but she was the one that we were shown. Mm-hmm. And that's important that she's also the one to, God, I hate this, to disarm him.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know, right? But both of those are important. It's important to know that Wakandans are still an isolationist country, that not just because T'Challa opened the borders to the rest of the world doesn't mean that the rest of the nation, everybody was on board with it. And T'Challa, while he worked with Bucky, he was still under the belief for quite some time that Bucky was the one who killed his father. So getting over that is not easy. And we've seen our preconceived notions get the best of us. So it says a lot about who the Wakandans are. It says a lot about T'Challa as the king, about Ao, about all the Dora Milaje. So it was a small moment that told us a lot about these characters.
Well, and it leaves Bucky again with another situation of wondering who actually trusts him and if he is trustworthy and if what Steve saw in him was accurate or not.
Well, even worse, it shows that there are still people out there that can control him. He had no idea. It was proof that he does not have autonomy over himself, that there's always somebody out there that can have one that knows more about him than he does.
Yeah.
See, yeah. I was going to type out a response in the post, but it was kind of a mouthful and I didn't know if I'd be able to type out a way that made it sound right. But it kind of reminds me of like people that deal with an addict in real life. You know, you no matter how sober somebody is from drugs or alcohol or whatever, you don't know if they're going to, you know, what's the trigger, right? Bucky has triggers that make him act like the Winter Soldier. An addict has triggers that make them want to drink or want to do drugs. And, you know, their family or the people around them don't get the luxury of a button that can make them not do that thing, right? But they did have that luxury. And it's very sad, but I don't really blame them for that, for taking that precaution. I feel like anybody that's ever had somebody like that in their life would take that precaution given the chance. And it does, you know, become hard to trust somebody in a circumstance like that. So you can't really blame them, you know?
If for any moment his work was all undone, somebody found a way to trigger the Winter Soldier again, there was a good chance that, you know, removing the arm and taking back what they had given him was a failsafe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is sad, but
it's understandable. Definitely, yeah.
I do understand it. You know, it's like how Batman has a contingency for everybody, you know, in the Justice League. You know, if you really think about it, like, that's kind of messed up. But at the same time, like, well, what do you do if Superman just goes rogue? Right. You better have a plan. So it's hard on everybody. And I think just because we're positioned with Bucky and we've seen a lot of vulnerability from him in this show, right, from obviously the beginning scene in this episode, but also earlier on when he's, you know, sleeping on the floor in his apartment and he's all these other things, that we feel for him. We feel more connected to him than we do, you know, pretty much anybody else on the show right now because of that emotional vulnerability.
Yeah.
So I do want to mention the fact that Sam's PTSD therapy has come back around. It's been quite some time since we actually got to refer back to that, but that's how we met him. He was helping soldiers through coming back and helping with, you know, group therapy. So it was nice that they were able to touch on it. Now, I don't think there was any point in his story where bringing it up was relevant, but he was just kind of relegated to the black sidekick role for a few movies. So this is nice to see things come back up, to not waste that plot point.
Yeah, that was a really cool callback. One of several in this episode, but that one was particularly important because, like you said, he was just a black sidekick for a lot of the MCU. And so him, you know, being able to do important things without superpowers, just by being a good guy and someone that's trained to do these things, was wonderful. Yeah, and he seemed to be having a really good heart-to-heart up until John Walker kind of
ruins it.
Pissed all over that.
Yeah. And that goes back to the, like, that's just a narrative mechanism that I am sick of seeing at this point. It happens like in every genre that has any action sequences and stuff like that. Like, this is just such a common concept that I was really hoping they weren't going to do it.
It would have been a really cool touch to not do it if they got to actually finish their conversation, go their separate ways, and then John Walker, like, he... Because then it would look like a calculated betrayal of Sam's confidence and not a bumbling kind of erratic mess.
Right.
But that's just me. Carly is more and more a bad guy in this, between threatening Sam's family and making the comments about killing Captain America and things like that, which is really showing the divergence of her versus the other Flag Smashers. They, you know, we saw her blow up that building with civilians in there, and her cohort being completely taken aback by it and upset and shocked and kind of scared. And then in this one, this guy is with her the entire episode, talking about how much he admires her cause and what she's been doing for everybody and how he looks up for people that, you know, helps out the little guy.
And how much he loves Captain America.
Including Captain America, like the Steve Rogers one. And then she, you know, she kills Battlestar. She kills him. She doesn't even seem to know that's what she was going to do. She just completely unleashes her power. She can't control it. And she murders him.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's kind of a weird scene, because keep in mind that earlier in this episode, she wants to kill Walker openly, right? So the fact that she kills Battlestar, like, that freaks her out. And so that leads to a couple of possibilities. Either one, she didn't realize what it would be like to kill someone just personally, not with, you know, a bomb, or I don't know. It just came off a little weird how afraid she seemed to be after the realization that he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that weird, that we need to kill Captain America line or whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of weird editing in this episode that again makes me think that some of this stuff was just like re-edited into a different plot line, because that line specifically was said off camera. You weren't looking at her, like, you didn't see her say it. It was looking at her partner that dies later. The scene where you see all the Flag Smashers together, like in the camp thing, and she's like standing way off to the side, and then in the next scene she's sitting down in the middle with all of them when they're watching the news. Like, there's a bunch of weird stuff, and so I'm not sure that line was originally what that was supposed to be. There was more hints of that deleted storyline this episode. And that line particularly stood out as a weird line.
Yeah.
So,
well, that would explain her reaction, because that obviously would have been filmed with whatever the original,
the original was. Right. Yeah.
But you know, this is what they went with, and so it just comes off a little strange.
Yeah, it definitely did.
You know, and they bug out and they all run separate directions. Like, but wasn't this the plan, was to kill them? Like, I thought that's what you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And so if they stick together, I mean, first off, it's a little unclear that she knows that Walker has super strength yet. I don't think she's aware of that yet. But they're all like scared of him, like they do know, but I don't know how they would have known.
Well, I think that they were scared of him just like in general, because he's Captain America and he's an imposing visage, even, you know, when he's not a super soldier. He's done some bad things.
Sure, already. But they've confronted all three of these guys before as super soldiers and didn't ever seem frightened.
No, but when they fought him on the trains and stuff, they were there was more Flag Smashers at that point. It wasn't just Carly and like one other guy.
Well, there was more than just the
two. Was there more than just two of them?
There was at least four of them.
Oh, okay. Well, they're all super soldiers though?
That was my understanding, but maybe they weren't. Maybe it was just the two of them that were super soldiers. That's my point though. It's like, it's kind of an unclear scene. Like, the clear thing is obviously that Battlestar dies and she's the one who kills him. That's clear. But the rest of it is very strange.
Well, there was the scene right before that confrontation when Walker throws his shield and it like embeds halfway into the wall, kind of showing that he doesn't understand this strength yet. Mm-hmm. And so it's possible that somebody saw that and was like, holy shit, this guy is not screwing around.
Maybe.
You know, that was the only like thing I saw before that would give any kind of a hint that he's a super soldier now.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to say that there does seem to be some inconsistency with the injuries here and super strength and stuff. Like, I think we can all agree that getting hit with that shield would be horrible. And Zemo takes it to the face, is just laying down with ice on his face later. There are no cuts, there are no bruises, like, and he's fine. There's no concussion or anything. And yet, you know, Battlestar gets hit in the column and I probably a break in his spinal cord somewhere. And so
at the least, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying that like his death wasn't I guess the problem that Zemo just walks away without any scrapes or bruises or anything bothers me a lot.
Well, it wasn't, it is inconsistent, because in the end scene too, that when that guy's running away, he gets the shield thrown at him and hit with it at least once, maybe twice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with super soldier strength.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still alive and like moving around and able to talk. So you would think that shield would do more damage than like just getting punched in the chest would.
Yeah.
You would think so. But like, I think this has always been a problem in the MCU with
power scaling just in general. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it is hard to be consistent with it, because it's not really mechanical. So it's hard to know, well, is he using his full strength? You know, like maybe he wasn't using his full strength when he hit Zemo. Maybe he knew to dial it back just enough to, you know, to knock him down or whatever.
You know, he's using his full strength in that last scene. I mean, there was no way he wasn't.
Right. And so like, maybe that's the difference. And so Carly, maybe she's been holding back, right, on the train sequences and stuff like that. Maybe that wasn't her 100%, and this time it just was, because she was in the moment or something like that, and she used her 100% and it killed him, and that's why she was scared. The problem is that we have to kind of guess what is going on. That's the big issue. I don't have a problem with characters holding back at times, because like that's what whole Civil War was about. That whole confrontation is all of them holding back because they don't really want to hurt each other, but that's made pretty clear to us.
Well, like that last scene, like when he's actually like above the dude, mm-hmm. to finishing it off, it would not, I feel like if Steve Rogers was doing that, not that he ever would, but he would have chopped through the guy in one. I mean, the human body is not like that tough, really, compared to a vibranium shield. And this guy, he took multiple hits and was still together.
I think that was my, like one of my biggest takeaways, because the amount of hits that Walker did versus what the body looked like.
Exactly.
Seeing the downward movement.
I think it's more just a Disney Plus thing,
just
honestly.
Horrifying. And yeah, I like it, the imagery and everything, it easily could have been rated R.
We've literally seen like Steve Rogers pick up a motorcycle with one arm and like hold a helicopter from taking off. You know, maybe the super soldier serum hadn't kicked in all the way yet or something like that. I mean, I don't know.
We don't know. It's not the same serum that Steve had. So we don't know that it's literally as strong, because we do know it's been changed enough to not actually modify a person's physical structure. That's why the Flag Smashers kind of look like regular people. That's why Carly doesn't look like a bodybuilder, right? But new Cap, right? Walker's already a pretty fit guy, so it doesn't change anything visually for us. But for all we know, he's not as strong as Steve was at the same age.
It's true. I guess when you're just thinking super soldier, you're thinking Steve Rogers is the one that we all know. So it's hard to not scale based off that, you know?
Well, with our only other comparison is Bucky, who also has a vibranium arm.
Yeah. So that makes it even harder to compare.
Exactly.
But he got the same serum in theory that Steve did. So,
right. And so like, it's very complicated. But I agree with you guys. It was just really weird. It was really inconsistent. And I am still floored that they showed all the blood on the shield on Disney Plus. I really honestly, like, don't get me wrong, it's an iconic shot and it was perfectly done, but I am still floored.
It was shocking. Like, it was very emotional. I audibly gasped when the whole thing was going down.
Well, that's what they were going for, obviously. But it is a little bit weird, like, in general, for even the MCU beyond Disney Plus, because really you don't see anybody bleed unless it's like a weird colored alien blood. Mm-hmm. Right. Well,
the Netflix shows.
Yeah, but like the movies, the core MCU, the Netflix shows we're not even sure MCU at this point. But,
You
don't really see anybody. You got to see Thanos get decapitated, and that was shocking, but it was purple alien blood that went everywhere, not red.
Right.
And this was very clearly red blood. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a shot that was meant to make everybody go, I don't like this. You know?
Yeah. It's not just like, I hate this guy. It's like, oh, this makes me very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then obviously the title of the episode, you know, comes into play because the whole world is watching and there's, you know, 100 people circling this with all of their phones out, you know, streaming to Facebook and whatnot. And, you know, like, forget for a minute what Walker's going to do. What is like the U.S. government going to do now that their poster boy murdered a dude out in the street with a shield with, you know, quote, our colors?
Well, they don't want to do that, or we don't want to talk about that because there's a hint as to what's coming with that in the trailer that you are avoiding. So
I see.
What comes next is going to give it's going to change the rest of the MCU for quite some time. Things may go back for a while, but this is going to have a lasting effect.
So there was a post on Reddit that I looked at that I thought was interesting, where somebody said that Walker is just a means to an end for the MCU. His point was that if Marvel had just given Sam the shield like they did it at the end of Endgame, that people would just think he's a crappy Captain America because he isn't Steve. But then now that you have Walker, who's a piece of crap with the shield that everybody hates, they can just all hate on him. And then when Sam becomes Captain America, then it's going to look way better for Sam and people are going to be way more accepting.
I don't think that's necessarily true at all. I think it works quite a bit in the context of everything. I think storytelling wise, the government would not have ever picked Sam Wilson as a symbol of the U.S.
But Steve Rogers did, and the government was, you know, he was their Captain America. So what are they gonna do, say no? I mean he had to give the shield back. They didn't say give us the shield back, where he voluntarily gave the shield back. So at that point they hadn't been like, well, we don't accept you as Captain America. He said, I don't accept the role of Captain America, and gave the shield back.
It is complicated by this because we don't know what they would have done. We don't even, like, to be fair, if Sam had just hidden the shield away, we don't even know that other than Bucky that anyone would have known what happened to the shield. And so the US government may have come up with their own cap with just a non-vibranium shield, right? It's not like they couldn't make a shield that looks like that one, since, you know, in real life, it's not actually made out of vibranium. So, yeah, they could have gone that route. I think that, I don't know, it's weird. It's one thing to kind of have Sam go through an arc where he learns that he does have what it takes to be Cap, and that he deserves to be Cap, and that he's the Cap that we need. That's one thing. But to have a guy who's just going to be like truly terrible, so, well, this guy's awful, let's go with you instead. It, for me, it almost cheapens it, because then did he earn it, or is he just not as bad as this dude?
Well, this was more not in the context of the MCU, more in the context of the viewers. Because, you know, a lot of people are like, why would Steve pick Sam instead of Bucky, his friend for like 100 years? You know, how does that make any sense? There was a lot of that. We all read it online.
Yeah,
that never made any sense to me. It's more in the context of viewers, I think.
Right.
That people are going to be more apt. Not that people in the MCU are going to be more apt, but the people that are viewing the MCU are going to be like, well, Sam's way better than this other shitbag. So it's going to be way an easier pill to swallow for people. Whereas before, they would have just been like, well, Sam is definitely not Steve Rogers. You know what I mean? That would have been their only comparison. But now we have the top end of good and the bottom end of bad. And as long as Sam is somewhere towards the top end, you know, it feels a lot better than maybe it would have otherwise. Because at that point, Sam would have been potentially the bottom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It made sense to me. Apparently you guys don't agree, but, you know, if you listener agree, then you or don't disagree, then hit us up on Twitter. Derek will plug that at the end, I'm sure.
I will. At Screen Heroes Pod. So, yes, I mean, that's how the episode ends, though, is just, you know, out on the street for the world to see. And, you know, we'll have to just see what the ramifications are of all of that good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a messed up episode.
It was.
Why do you guys think the Wakandans left them the shield?
I don't think they care about it.
But it's vibranium.
So
aren't they like super protective of all the vibranium? Isn't that like a thing?
Yeah, but it was given away, you know, to Sam from Steve, who, you know, so I don't know that they necessarily would have.
Sam didn't have it anymore.
Oh, right, because, yeah. I don't know.
Also, those little balls that they left everywhere for Bucky to pick up. Can we talk about how that's like $10 million in vibranium that they just like left laying on the ground?
Maybe it wasn't vibranium.
I guess, but I just assume any metal that comes out of Wakanda at this point is vibranium.
They probably don't use it for everything.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah. I don't know. I just assume that they're just like leaving these, you know, $3 million vibranium balls laying around.
Hopefully a kid doesn't find one.
Right. He's going to be made rich forever if he did. Or he just leaves it as a marble or something.
Well, is there anything else you guys want to touch on from this episode? No? Ray's shaking her head no?
No. Okay. I said no.
It didn't get picked up. All right, cool. Well, then we're going to wrap things up for this week. We will be back next week to talk about the penultimate episode, episode 5 of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. We, of course, are the Screen Heroes podcast. You can find us at screen-heroes.com with all of our links to all of our social media, our Facebook group, all of the podcast apps. If you want to subscribe to our feed, we would appreciate it. So join our group, listen to the show, the whole nine. You can find me at the Star Trek Dude on Twitter. Ray, where can people find you?
I'm at Siren Ray.
And Ryan, where can people find you?
At Buster Props.
And you can find us at the Screen Heroes Podcast Facebook page live Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We live stream every episode. Kind of quiet this week, but if you join us next week, you can chat with us during the show, and we will be glad to talk about your comments in chat if you want to leave some. So hopefully you will join us then. Otherwise, you can catch the episodes when they release on Wednesdays. Thank you for joining us. We'll catch you all next time.